Me big burping? To the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is award-winning Dorian. With me, as always, is fellow award winner, Max McKenna. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah? You feeling good?
Feeling like a winner.
Yeah. We're recording this from our yacht that we bought with our earnings from the awards when we were showered with
cash. I spent $6 on a 12-ounce beer. I made no money.
You paid money, basically.
Paid money.
Real quick, though, I know we usually save our acknowledgments for end of the episode, but right off the top, thanks, everyone, for voting for us.
Yes.
We won Best Entertainment Podcast, and we came close. We were in the top five for
That's true. Podcast of the year.
So watch out.
That was cool.
Watch out, Whiskey Business. We're coming for you next year. I don't know. That guy has a lot of fans because it's a very good podcast. So we'll see. We're not going to get too competitive about it, but we do want to thank everyone who supported us and the friends who showed up to the awards. It was a
super
fantastic
cool.
time.
Yeah.
I also want to give a quick thanks at the top of the episode to everyone who I messaged and decided to throw in some cash for Max's bachelor party gift.
You want to give a quick thanks. I want to give a quick thanks to all those people.
Yeah.
Who were super sweet and very kind. That ruled. Genuinely, so much.
Yeah, that was really cool. Just seeing, like, everybody rally together, like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll throw in for Max to get this shrunken head.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Lux Taxidermy for making this happen. International shipping is a nightmare, and...
Yeah, oh my god, I imagine shipping, like, a biological specimen internationally is even worse.
Yeah. But yeah, we cannot wait to get that shrunken head. Brittany, thank you so much. Everybody, make sure you look up Lux Taxidermy. They do some really awesome work.
Yeah, genuinely, that was super kind. I felt very appreciated. My fiance likes it.
Oh, good.
She said it was okay.
Good. Good. Yeah, I made the mistake of not asking her before we just went ahead and decided you need this thing. So cool.
Nah, she rules. She'd be cool with it.
Good. That's good to hear. I want to give a special shout out to someone who wanted to send money, but the, you know, international exchange of money can be difficult sometimes. Ola, big fan of the podcast,
yeah,
sent us some cash from Poland.
That is wild to me.
She didn't only send cash.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. Live on the air.
She sent us a box.
What?
Why don't you pop that open?
What? Have you opened this yet?
Yeah, I have. I know what's in it.
Oh, so, my God.
This is Max's live reaction, opening the box.
Thank you.
You can just pop it. You can just pop the top off, yeah. What do you see in there, Max?
I see some panna cotta, candy. There's a lot of chocolate, some Krauka, some big W's.
These are all
the
Polish names of candy that we do not fully recognize, but it looks delicious.
Oh my god, panna cotta rule. Have you ever had panna cotta?
No, it looks good. Is it like raspberry white chocolate sort of situation?
So I don't know what this is, but panna cotta is like cream with sugar in it and you mix it up a whole bunch.
Okay.
I don't know what this is. Oh my god.
So that's it in chocolate bar form, it looks like?
Yeah.
She sent a card too. You don't have to read it, but Aww. It was very sweet. She basically said that because shipping was expensive, she decided to throw some other stuff in there too.
Oh,
So this is officially the coolest thing we've received so far.
That rules. This rules so much.
Yeah, it's so, so dope.
I can't read this.
I can't either. But she wrote a message in English, which was very considerate of her.
Oh my god. Ola, this is like the sweetest thing I've ever gotten in the mail, probably. Aw. That rules. I love this. Thank you so much. Like, having people chip in to send things across the world for this goofy podcast makes me very, very happy.
It's so cool. Yeah, and, you know,
aww,
Bachelor Party was an awesome success. We clearly have a lot of people here who love you and care about you. And it's pretty cool that there's a bunch of people around the world who like you, too, enough to send you all this stuff. So
absolutely.
Shout out to those people.
Shout out to all y'all.
Thank you guys for being the best fans in the world. Any success aww that our podcast ever has is completely due to you guys being amazing.
Absolutely.
So aw. Max is swooning over here. I don't know if we'll get to the topic, but I assume you've gathered research about something death related for us to talk about today.
I did, and I actually coincidentally was thinking about a Polish kitchen while I was putting this together. Give me one sec here.
Full disclosure, Max, I don't know how stuffy you are, but I'm getting over a cold.
It, baby.
Okay, yeah.
Coming out of it.
We're getting over colds. We're going to power through. We got to do it for our amazing fans.
Yeah. So I was thinking about the Polish kitchen that we have here in Columbus because it kind of lined up with this little local interest story that deals with death that I thought would be kind of a cool intro to our episode today.
Uh-huh.
So you know North Market.
Yeah, Hubert's Polish Kitchen.
Hubert's Polish.
Yeah, great stuff.
Great stuff. Hot chicken's there.
Mm.
You got Brezel.
What's Brezel?
It's the pretzel place.
Oh, yeah, I haven't had them yet.
It's dope.
Okay.
I like North Market a lot, but the thing that makes me angry is that I want to buy more food than I can afford there.
Yeah, they have too much good food there.
Too much. But it's great, and it's one of those places that you should go if you're in Columbus ever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where I'm going with this? Have you heard about this story?
No. How is this death related?
Okay.
I'm scared.
So this has apparently been going on for a couple of years. Did you know that there's a graveyard under North Market?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Under North Market?
Yeah. Like in the parking lot and under the market itself.
What?
And you know how they're trying to expand, right?
Yeah, they're trying to make it a big skyscraper building.
Yeah, that's dumb. But this graveyard is kind of throwing a wrench in the plans.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. So I put an article in here that is kind of cobbled from a 2019 Dispatch article and a 2017 WOSU article, which is like our local NPR station here. It's pretty neat. You should check this out.
Early on a sunny April morning, the North Market parking lot is still empty. It's on this spot that developers plan to build a 26-story high-rise. However, Columbus-based archaeologist Ryan Weller says there could be more than 30 bodies under the surface. Quote, "The whole parking lot was completely contained in what used to be the North Graveyard for Columbus. As you're walking on the sidewalks and the pavement through here, there's burials less than a foot to 2 feet deep. In the early 19th century, the cemetery was well used because downtown church lots were too small to have cemeteries of their own. It eventually reached about 10 acres in size. When the cemetery closed in the 1870s, some bodies were transferred to Greenlawn Cemetery, but a good number were left behind. Because the area is sealed and fairly dry, some of the skeletons are still in good shape, and clothing and coffin fragments can be easily found."
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Where do I get me a piece of a coffin fragment?
Well, look. Like, there's photos, and it's just like, you know exactly where that is. Like, I've parked there.
Oh, my God.
Like, I tell people to go to North Market when they come to Columbus, and I didn't realize that I had been telling them to go, like, walk over, like, a bunch of bodies.
Go trample on some skeletons while you're here in sunny Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
That's wild. It is very shallow, too.
And, like, there's, like, a photo of a skeleton included in this.
Right.
And you can see buttons from the clothing,
that this person had been buried in that are still preserved.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't even realize that. I just saw the pelvis and was like, whoa.
Yeah. I guess it's really well preserved because they leveled the ground. So they pressed it, you know, with like a bulldozer. Or what's the thing with the rolly thing?
Yeah, that's a bulldozer. Okay,
yeah. Like basically just compressed all of, like vacuum sealed all these skeletons in like basically dirt. And it's just moisture free. They squeezed all the water out and sealed it with black top over top. So no water can get in. So they're like perfectly preserved down there.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty cool stuff. It makes me very happy. And when I saw it, it reminded me of the story of Richard III.
Okay.
Do you know what his deal was?
No.
You're going to find out. Today, I don't really know what the topic is. Roughly, it's bodies under our feet.
Okay.
But I'm very excited for it. So let's get into it with the Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic moment, brought to you by Kroger. Another Ohio staple.
Thanks, Kroger. Very underrated seltzer water.
I like it. It's better than Giant Eagles.
Fuck fruition. They actually have a normal seltzer water there, too, but
I don't like it.
Fair enough.
So, I mentioned the story about North Market up the top, and we're going to get into some more stuff about that at the end of the episode, but thinking about that made me think about urban sprawl and how cities keep growing and expanding. And part of that thing about cities growing and expanding means that they take over land that used to be pretty pastoral. They take over fields, you take over vacant lots. And a lot of those places used to have people buried in them.
Hmm.
So as I was researching this episode, I was kind of thinking about like what our role is, how we should act towards bodies from the past. Should we move skeletons we find during construction? Should we build over them? Should we relocate them? How much should we be paying attention as we dig? I don't know. Do you have any? What do you think about that?
I don't know. One thought I had, though, is just are there families that are upset by the moves being made with their deceased loved ones?
Well, that's like the airport people that we talked about.
Right.
Where they were like no, our parents bought this. You're not moving them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting that they literally paved over all these bodies at North Market and nobody protested. I guess they did move a bunch of them to Greenlawn, so
yeah.
maybe they were selective with that process. Like, well, this family still has some living relatives that could be pissed off at us, so we will definitely move them somewhere nicer. Everybody else, fuck them.
The ones that were left were people who weren't claimed, because there's a guy now who has a relative there. And he's like, no, you got to move these bodies. So he's forcing them to like dig and excavate before they pave over it and build that new skyscraper.
Huh.
So I don't know. Maybe we can go check out the dig site and see that. That'd be cool. I don't know.
Just while there are construction workers working, we're like, hey, can we see the dead bodies, please?
Just peeking in the dirt.
I want to see the bones.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you think about like how many people have lived, and then by extension, how many people have died. And then you kind of got to contend with, well, how many places in the world don't have dead people buried under them? But also, I don't like when you just build a big, dumb building wherever you want, because then you ruin a lot of things that I like a lot.
Yep.
Like High Street.
Like all of the cool stuff in Columbus.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
But I also am like, I mean, if you're digging and you just find like a finger, how much do you owe it to like that person to excavate around it? I don't know.
Finders, keepers, fingers.
You get to keep it.
Yep.
It's like a fun toothpick now. Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It's a really interesting question, though. But conveniently, we can look to the story of Richard III as like an example of what urbanization and death meeting looks like. So now I gotta get my facts straight, or else all our English listeners are gonna be pissed off at me. So Richard III was the King of England, but not for a super long time. He was only ruling from June 1483 until August 1485.
Okay.
So a little over 2 years.
Yeah, solid run.
You know?
Short.
His brother, King Edward IV, was king before him and ruled until Edward died. And then Richard became king of England, like you do. And his rule was pretty divisive. People were not a big fan of his from the start. And England was already going through a lot of turmoil. This is the War of the Roses period.
Ah.
Which is the thing I've heard of.
I just know that Game of Thrones is based heavily on it.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I heard that the War of the Roses has fewer dragons, though. So.
I mean, very similar. People were very pissed off and did some depraved things with bodies.
Ew.
As we're going to find out. So as the War of the Roses continued, there was this big battle, which was called the Battle of Bosworth Field. And it's during this battle that King Richard got himself killed by the Tudors, who I've heard of them.
Yeah.
They're a thing.
Very gassy people.
Very gassy. I wish their name was like Tudors, but the Tudors is a little
Tudors.
Funnier. Yeah. So the Tudors were trying to take him out, and they eventually did at the Battle of Bosworth Field. But Richard's death was not pretty or good. Not that a lot of deaths are, but...
Yeah, I want a pretty death. I want a very elegant, beautiful death.
Yeah. This one was not that. How about you read this account of the battle from Wikipedia?
Accounts note that King Richard fought bravely and ably during the battle, unhorsing Sir John Chaney, a well-known jousting champion, killing the opposing army's standard bearer, and coming within a sword's length of enemy commander Henry Tudor before being surrounded by Sir William Stanley's men and killed. War historian Jean Molinet says that a Welshman struck the death blow with a halberd while Richard's horse was stuck in the marshy ground. It was said that the blows were so violent that the king's helmet was driven into his skull. Richard's naked body was flung over a horse after the battle, and a sword was thrust through the right buttock, through the pelvis, and into the abdomen.
This is a rough go.
My boy got shish kebabbed.
Yeah, he got kebabbed.
Woo!
And, I mean, for a long time, this story was pretty apocryphal. Because it's kind of crazy. But we'll see how things kind of got cleared up.
Crazy if true.
Yeah. Richard had a rough end, to say the least of it.
For sure.
Because he was the deposed king and people thought he was bad.
He had a stabbed end at the end of it.
He did have a stabbed end.
His end.
They just kind of rotated him around a big fire.
His rear end.
His butt. Buttocks. He was buried in a fairly simple grave in Leicester, England. Katrina's sister lives in England, and her brother-in-law is English. And I'm about to start using them as a pronunciation key in a little bit. Because this city is pronounced L-E-I-C-E-S-T-E-R.
That's how it's spelled?
Yeah. Okay. I've only ever seen it written. So I've always said, like, Leicester. It's yeah. Leicester.
Just Leicester?
It's bonkers, yeah. Leicester.
Did those same people come up with Worcestershire sauce? Are they responsible for that?
Well, what's the other one that people mispronounce? It's in, like, Ireland all the time. It starts with a G. We got called on it.
Glasgow?
Yeah, Glasgow.
No, that's Scotland, right?
Glasgow?
Glasgow.
Instead of Glasgow?
Glasgow.
There's something.
I think it was like Glasgow? We fucked up already.
Oh man,
we're going to get so much hate mail already for this one.
We're like really inundating it.
Sorry.
I said Leicester correctly, so I'm going to take that to my grave. Because I had to Google how it's pronounced. So Richard was buried in a fairly simple grave in Leicester. But things didn't get much better for him. Because he was definitely like a history is written by the victors kind of guy.
Right.
Because the guy who beat Richard in battle, Henry Tudor, will go on to start the Tudor dynasty, which yeah. was big because they have houses named after them.
I love that he was like a little kid with toys and he was like, yeah, I killed him and then I smashed it. I smashed his helmet into his skull and I stabbed a sword through his butt and it came out of his belly.
But just remember, video games are the things that make people violent.
Yep.
So Shakespeare was all buddy-buddy with the Tudors. Like, that's how he got in and was writing all that stuff. So this meant that when Shakespeare wrote the play Richard III about the king who had just been killed, the play was titled Richard III.
Yeah.
He dragged Richard III. Like, absolutely annihilated the guy. He described him as having a hunched back, being rudely stamped.
It's very rude.
And I do have an excerpt from the play here, and I want you to put on your best Shakespearean voice to read this. This is Shakespeare's character of Richard III describing himself.
I'm going to level with you. I don't really know the Shakespearean delivery.
You say whatever you want, dog.
Oh, all right.
No one else does. He was dead. We don't have any recordings of his voice.
That's,
you
don't know what he
sounds like. It's like Abraham Lincoln being all squeaky.
Well, here's my impression of Shakespearean. Cheated of feature by dissembling nature. Deformed, unfinished. Sent before my time into this breathing world. Scarce half made up. And that's so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them.
It's very rude. Like, Shakespeare wrote this dude calling himself so ugly that dogs would freak out when he walked past.
That's tight.
Like, born before my time into this breathing world, scarce half made up.
Yeah, I love that a dude would just park on a street corner and scream at the top of his lungs about how hideous he is and how he just wasn't finished.
Dogs are barking at me all the time. So that wasn't really accurate. It's not really accurate compared to photos, paintings of Richard III. That was mostly a case of Shakespeare being a real jerk. But people in Tudor times did not like Richard III. People hated him so much that it was legend that within 60 years of his death, his body had been exhumed and just thrown into a river.
Oh.
Like, people were like, this guy doesn't even deserve a little grave. Let's just throw him in a river and be done with it.
Water burial. Very dishonorable.
Very dishonorable.
As we covered in our Death in the Ocean episode.
For more info like this.
Would you like to learn more?
They also claimed that his tomb had been turned into a feed trough for horses at a nearby inn.
This is quite rude.
Also rude. So, for centuries, because of that legend, the actual resting place of Richard III was unknown. There were some attempts in the mid-1990s, to find his tomb, but didn't have any luck. And then in 2007, there was a breakthrough, because there was an apartment building that stood on the former footprint of the church where people thought Richard had been buried, and that apartment building was demolished. They were like, this is old, we're going to knock it down, you know, normal demolishing. So archaeologists checked below the apartment building. They came up empty-handed, but they found out that the maps they had been using the whole time to kind of place where they thought the church would have been, and therefore Richard's body would have been, they found out that those maps were incorrect. Because they moved the apartment and they were like, oh, we're actually off by like a couple hundred feet.
Okay. Huh.
So they kind of did some more math and more excavating, and they figured out that with the adjusted maps, the original site of Richard's tomb wasn't under the apartment building, but it was under a nearby parking lot.
Ah.
So just like Columbus.
Yeah.
So they were like, I guess he's probably here, you know? And they like spray painted a big R on the parking lot where they thought his body was going to be.
R for Richard?
For Richard, yeah. Because they had to go get the permits, because this is like a busy part of town.
Yeah, right.
You can't just take a massive multi-year undertaking to tear up a parking lot without getting the okay.
Yeah, just imagine going to your closest big city, wherever you live, and just picking a parking lot downtown and just being like,
Hey, real quick, I'm going to smash this apart so I can see if there's a dead king under here.
I'm going to fuck this place up for like 5 years.
You're going to need a permit for that.
So they eventually got permission to excavate. And in September of 2012, they hit Pater. So here's an excerpt from a Guardian article I found about this. It's pretty cool.
The crooked spine of a long dead warrior, complete with an arrow in its back and a gash across its skull, was found on the site of the Grey Friars Church, where King Richard III is thought to have been buried in 1485 after losing his throne and his life at the Battle of Bosworth Field. Archaeologists remain cautious about linking the bones with the king, but they describe it as certainly warranting further detailed examination. Archaeologist Richard Taylor told a press conference that the combination of deformity and probable death by violence justified paying closer attention to the skeleton. Quote, "We are not saying today that we have found Richard III. What we are saying is that the search for Richard III has entered a new phase. The skull injury appears consistent with an injury received in battle. A bladed implement appears to have cleaved part of the rear of the skull. We also believe that the individual would have had severe scoliosis, which is a form of spinal curvature. This would have made his right shoulder appear visibly higher than the left shoulder, and this is consistent with contemporary accounts of Richard's appearance."
Yeah.
Hmm.
So here's a photo of the skeleton as it was found in the parking lot. And it certainly looks like the skull of a guy who had a halberd rammed through his skull.
Yeah, that's a big enough chunk that you could probably fit some helmet in there.
Yep. And you can actually see, if you look, you can see how the spine is curved.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really hunched, interesting.
Kind of scooped forward a little bit.
Yeah. So Shakespeare described Richard III as having a hunched back. But what he probably meant was that he had scoliosis.
He had bad posture.
He had that Justin Bieber hump.
Yeah, that seems to fit the description.
Yeah. And if you look, you can actually see a photo of the parking lot they were digging up.
Yeah. They kept a remarkable amount of this parking lot intact while they were digging it up.
Yeah.
Very respectful of them.
I also like how they kept the signs on the walls.
Yeah. They were more respectful to this parking lot than most people were of Richard III.
So it was a really cool discovery, but the way that they ended up connecting this skeleton to the actual person of Richard III was also pretty cool. Because, you know, they had the spine, but, like, you know, maybe people got curvy spines. And maybe that was just a goofy skull thing.
Yeah.
And they wanted to be sure, because it's royalty. But because the idea of a lineage in, like, English royalty is so important, they were able to trace Richard's bloodline from 1485 to 4 people today.
Mm.
4 remaining descendants. So 2 of them carried the mitochondrial DNA, which is passed down through the mother's side and is important somehow in a way smart people understand and I don't.
Okay.
But that was the DNA that was required to confirm his identity. So one of them was a guy named Michael Ibsen, and he was Richard's 17th generation nephew, and he's a cabinet maker in Canada.
Oh, cool.
He just lives up there and makes cabinets and just does his thing.
That sounds like a good life.
Yeah.
Hope you're doing well. I assume he listens to the show.
I assume he's a friend of the pod. So, in actually a really cool twist, because his nephew made cabinets, Michael Ibsen makes cabinets. Once they confirmed that the skeleton belonged to Richard III, they wanted to rebury it. So they had Michael Ibsen make a coffin for the skeleton.
Oh, cool.
Which is neat.
Yeah, like, I love that.
Yeah, there's like some cool photos of him standing in front of the coffin he made for this king that he's like, I guess I'm related to.
Holy shit, that's wild.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because Richard was the last English monarch to be killed in battle. And he was also the only monarch whose body was lost.
Hmm.
So I guess they fully completed the English monarch connection through there, which is neat. I'm happy for him, I guess. I don't know.
That's cool. It's kind of like Pokemon. Like, cool, you collected all of them, but now what have you achieved?
You get to go talk to the guy in Celadon City. who tells you to come back when you collect all 150, and then he gives you a little certificate.
You get, well, good job, England. You got your certificate. You collected all the kings.
Did you get all 150? You remember
me?
That?
Yeah. No, I don't have the attention span to complete any video game. Like, I will never 100% complete any video game.
Okay. I got all of them. The last one I caught was Kangaskhan in the Safari Zone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's fine.
I like him. He's like a little rocky kangaroo.
Yeah, he's weird. So, this is cool. You know, it was cool that they were able to make that connection. And weirdly, this is a thing that happened with royalty kind of a lot through the years. Like, bodies would just get lost and put in weird places. And it happened with, like, Mozart, too. Like, Mozart's head was removed from his body. Like, the skull was, and it was passed around by collectors.
Really?
It's very goofy. Yeah.
Were they trying to cryogenically freeze him?
No, they just, they like autographed it. Like, people wrote on his skull.
What?
Yeah. It's super goofy. But it happened to other people too. Like King Louis the 14th. I'm getting really good at reading Roman numerals.
Yeah.
Louis the 14th was, I guess the thing the French did when kings would die is they would split you into three pieces. They would take out your heart, and they would take out your entrails, and they would bury those in separate containers, and then they would bury your body in a separate container. I don't know why.
Did that maybe carry over from the practices of ancient Egypt?
But, like, that's so far removed, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of weird that they would take from that.
I don't know. I don't know. But they did that, and, you know, they were... A lot of shit went down in France after Louis the 14th reigned.
Right.
Like the French Revolution, when people were like, we don't want kings anymore. And so they destroyed the body at that point, and the heart is like gone. Like nobody knows where that is. Just like got thrown into a river somewhere, probably. But interestingly enough, in 2015, the barrel containing his entrails was found in the church at Notre Dame.
Whoa. Just
under some stairs.
Whoa.
Yeah. And like the French Revolution was dangerous for everybody's guts, I guess. Because there was another king of England named James II. So he got kicked out of England because they didn't want him as king anymore. He tried to bring a monarchy back and people were like, no. So they kicked him out and he went to France, which is probably the most dangerous place to be if you're a king trying to establish a monarchy.
Right.
So he died in France and he wanted to be buried in Westminster Abbey. He wanted his stuff to be sent back home. But his French allies were like, oh, let's lay low on that for a little bit until like people are cool with you again. So they did that same thing. They cut him up into three pieces and like kept him in France. And then the French Revolution happened. And since he was a king, they destroyed his body and, you know, burned it and did all that stuff. And his remains were lost for like 50 years. Then 50 years later, in 1824... some workers were digging the foundation for a church and they hit a barrel and they were just like, oh, this is King James. Just buried in France in like a field.
Huh.
Just like you do.
Like you do, I guess.
Yeah, it's goofy. There have been a lot of people who have ended up in this situation. And a lot of their stories are kind of similar. When you walk outside, you're probably walking over some kind of buried person from thousands of years ago. Probably.
Yeah.
But this also happens with people who haven't been properly buried, where you stumble upon their remains and you got to deal with it. So let's hop on over to India and take a look at Rupkund Lake.
Hmm.
So Rupkund Lake is a glacial lake in Chamoli, India. It's very pretty. Look at this photo. It's beautiful. Gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Sandy.
It's, well, that's snow.
Oh. Snowy.
Snowy. It's a glacial lake. It's up in the mountains. It's just kind of like a little thing of melt. It's not super big, but it's a really pretty color, and it's in a good-looking mountain range.
It's a good-looking mountain. Hey, how you doing?
It's also surrounded by hundreds of skeletons.
What's that?
It's a beautiful lake, and it's in a really pretty bunch of mountains, and it's surrounded by hundreds of skeletons just everywhere.
Oh wow, holy shit. Okay, so looking at a photo of some kind of some intentionally crafted little stacks of bones, little shelters made out of skulls and femurs, and this is dope. Kind of spooky.
It's kind of spooky. Look at the photo of the hillside that's also in here. Just go down. Everywhere. Like, this kind of valley is just littered with bones.
Wow. That's spooky as shit.
Yeah. The intentional things are because people had to bring them out of the lake. Like, they didn't find them like that. They just found skeletons in this lake, and they were like, just pulling femurs and skulls out by like the dozen. It's crazy.
Wow.
But this spot was just part of a park. It's pretty rough terrain, so it wasn't really explored. It was lost for a long time.
Sure.
But in 1942, a park ranger was just going the long way around and peeked in and found this, and I imagine was terrified.
Yeah, shit tons of bones.
Yeah, but I mean, this is India, and it was 1942, and the British still had a huge stake in India at the time.
Right.
So originally, people thought it was like a Japanese invasion force who were trying to attack the British that got like stuck in the mountains and all ended up dying.
Okay, pretty big force though. I mean, even these four photos you are showing me, it's like, that's a lot of bones.
It's hundreds of bodies, yeah. Hundreds of skeletons. And the Japanese invasion was ruled out because the bones were, like, dry.
You know,
there was no way that they could have been this desiccated and empty and not have found, like, weaponry or any sort of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way that could have happened. So people were like, I don't actually know what this is. Because, you know, 1942, people had had records of who lived up there for a while.
Right. So these are probably very, very old.
Yeah. And they knew that, like, there weren't people up there. There weren't people carrying bodies up there all the time. These are old, you know?
Yeah.
All in all, there's probably 200 bodies at this lake, which is bonkers. And it's a total mystery. Like, even today, we can't say for sure why these are up there.
Wow.
But there is a local legend surrounding it that I'm going to have you read. This is one that Atlas Obscura puts forth. I don't know if it's true, but it's really interesting to read.
Hmm.
And provides some cool tidbits about how old these bodies are.
A 2004 expedition to Rupkund Lake seems to have finally revealed the mystery of what caused those people's deaths. As it turns out, all the bodies date to around 850 AD. DNA evidence indicates that there were two distinct groups of people. One, a family or tribe of closely related individuals. And a second, smaller group of locals, likely hired as porters and guides. Rings, spears, leather shoes, and bamboo staves were found, leading experts to believe that the group was comprised of pilgrims heading through the valley with the help of the locals. All the bodies had died in a similar way, from blows to the head. However, the short, deep cracks in the skulls appeared to be the result not of weapons, but rather of something rounded. The bodies also only had wounds on their heads and shoulders, as if the blows had all come from directly above. What had killed them all, porter and pilgrim alike? Among Himalayan women, there is an ancient and traditional folk song. The lyrics describe a goddess so enraged at outsiders who defiled her mountain sanctuary that she rained death upon them by flinging hailstones hard as iron. Because of this, the 2004 expedition offered the theory that all 200 people died from a sudden and severe hailstorm.
So I don't know about that. I know hailstorms can get kind of wild, but mm-hmm. to kill 200 people, it seems like after the first 100, people would just be like, you'd be able to just hide under someone else's body, be okay.
Yeah, these gotta be falling at a pretty alarming speed too, yeah. You know, to bash people's heads in and kill them.
A weirder thing is, and this was like a couple months ago, they did some genetic testing and were able to trace the ethnicity of the bodies they found. Some of them were from Southeast Asia. So like, you know, the Vietnam area, sure. Which is, you know, far, but not unreasonable.
Yeah.
And a good portion of the bodies were from the Mediterranean. Right?
What?
It's weird. It's really weird.
That's bizarre. Literal opposite directions, too.
Yeah.
Away from India.
So some people think that it was maybe a large exploring party from the Mediterranean that was making their way over and hired like porters or guides who were from Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, man. Like back in 850 AD, I can't think of anything that would have killed all these people this quickly in such a uniform way.
Right. That's so bizarre. That just... it creates more questions than answers.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think that you got to go with the old... there's like a rule of thumb in anthropology that I've seen a couple times, which is if you find a large amount of bodies in one place, it's probably a graveyard, you know?
Sure. This does not seem like the kind of terrain that would be good for a graveyard, though.
No, like the only thing I can think of is like sky burial or something.
Hmm. Sure.
But also there's the cracks in the skull, so I don't know if like that was some sort of like ritual, like to release the soul or something, they would crack the skull. I don't know.
They said the shoulders too.
Yeah.
So that's weird. This doesn't seem as deliberate as like one good crack on the top of the head.
No, it's very bizarre. We'll post some articles about this because it's... I read about it and I'm like, I can't tell what's going on up here.
Mm.
But even if you can't tell what's going on, that doesn't mean that you should like ruin it, you know?
Right.
And because of the legend surrounding the lake and because of the interest in it, tourists are constantly going up there and want a souvenir. So tourists are constantly going up and taking bones.
Right.
Which is not great.
I'm not going to lie. The first thing I thought is, can I go to this place and take some bones?
You're the problem.
I am the problem. I admit it.
But, you know, you're kind of left with like a catch-22 where if this was a graveyard, the bodies were probably left intentionally unburied. It's really hostile terrain. Like we learned about with sky burial, it's tough to find a place to bury bodies here, so maybe they just left the bodies out intentionally.
Right.
But if people can't stop going up and taking the bones as souvenirs, would it be right to remove the skeletons from this place and bury them somewhere else? I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, otherwise you'd be hiring like park security 24/7 and hoping people forget about it eventually. But it's on the internet. Like, no one's gonna forget about it now.
Yep.
Now that we've talked about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though they are just bones, like, you know, they were people.
Right.
At some point.
Yeah.
And if this ground was sacred, you want to treat it like it is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot being lost here about whatever culture belonged to these people. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know their story.
Yeah. And I think you're really hitting on what I want to talk about as we kind of bring this back to Columbus to close out the episode. I think it's weird when you find a skeleton and you don't know that person's story. Hmm. You know? Because, yeah. Like, I'm just like, it's just bones, you know?
Sure.
But also, it was a person, I guess.
Right.
Not I guess, it was a person. Don't be an asshole about it.
Right.
So I wanted to look into the graveyard that was under North Market a little more. And I found some stuff out about how when it closed, they were moving bodies to a different cemetery.
Right, Greenlawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people were being buried in this cemetery under North Market, the Old North Cemetery, until like the 1830s. It closed and they started moving bodies in the 1870s. So people were like aware of and knew the people who were being moved. And I was kind of looking into this a little more, and I found a book from 1892 by a guy named Alfred Emery Lee. The book is titled The History of the City of Columbus, Capital of Ohio, Volume 2. And in the book, Lee actually writes about what the process was like moving bodies from the Old North Cemetery to where they are today.
The exhumation and removal of the remains interred in the North Graveyard, begun soon after the opening of Greenlawn and accelerated by condemnation of part of the old burying ground for the use of the Springfield Railway, was not finally concluded until the year 1881. The reopening of the old graves and removal of their contents to Greenlawn were attended by some curious revealments and incidents. On the finger of a young lady whose remains were lifted in 1872 was found, bright as ever, its circlet of gold, but the gems with which the jewel had been set were gone. The body of Cyrus Sells, of whose murder in the penitentiary an account has been given in the history of that prison, was taken up during the same year and was well preserved. The skull revealed the fatal cuts made with the axe in the hands of the convict Clark. The remains of Peter Sells and wife, who had been dead for more than 40 years, were also well preserved. Substantially, the same facts were true of many others. A bit of ribbon binding the hair of an unknown lady whose body had been in the grave more than 30 years still retained its color. The hair of persons who had been deceased for nearly half a century was sometimes found in a state of almost lifelike freshness. One of the well-preserved bodies taken up was that of Jacob Leeb, one of the pioneers of Columbus who, when living, was considered the most powerful man physically in Franklin County. His height was 6'2". Solomon Miller, another pioneer whose body was exhumed, had died at the age of 38. In the grave of Mrs. Standish, who had been dead 26 years, were found two copper coins, much tarnished. In the grave of Mrs. Cole, who had been dead 31 years, were found her heavy gold earrings, which were presented to surviving friends. One of the bodies taken up on December 1st, 1881, was that of Henry Foster, the young man killed during the Know-Nothing riot on High Street in 1854. The last bodies to be removed were the unclaimed ones and those buried in the Kerr Tract, which had been longest in litigation. The northeastern portion of the grounds, owing to its marshy nature, contained but few, if any, graves. It was reserved by the city as a site for a market house.
That brings us full circle. That's the North Market, baby.
Woo! What a history. All this stuff is just, like, kind of lost, I feel like.
Yeah.
Just all these little details about the jewelry and how this convict was murdered. And
yeah.
I want to know about the Know-Nothing riots. What were that?
I want to know about this guy who was the most powerful man physically in Franklin County.
I like that his height is, it's basically just my height.
Yeah, you see people who, like, just didn't get nutrients back then because they didn't have vitamins yet.
Yeah,
It was like,
old-timey people didn't invent vitamins yet, because they're dumb.
They were like, 6'2", a giant among men.
I hope that I can find a time machine and go back in time, and people can just marvel at my size and strength.
Like, the fact that you would know everyone in a whole county and be able to be like, that's the guy.
That's the strongest.
That's the most powerful man physically in the county. But yeah, I think, like, when people are found and they're just skeletons, you lose a lot of these stories, you know?
Right.
And you lose kind of these things where it's like, well, this guy was once the strongest guy in the county, and this guy was like a prisoner and had a part in this prison riot or something, and this other guy was killed in a political riot. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, death has a way of, it's not just that your biological material gets reduced to dirt, it's also that your story can get lost and you just kind of become part of the surroundings.
Yeah.
And it does make me wonder, when we're doing construction projects and bulldozing over things and just building on top of bodies, what are the stories that we are letting go and letting disappear? Because once they go, you can't just just get them back and rediscover them.
Yeah, it kind of makes me have some sympathy for people who are really into like needing a headstone or needing a monument, because it is kind of freaky to think about being like erased from the earth. Like, there's people who are buried in that cemetery under North Market now who it's like, we don't know who they were.
Right.
We never will.
Yeah. Kind of somber, but that's death for you.
It comes even for the most physically powerful man in the county.
Even if you're 6'2". Yeah, thanks for putting that together, Max.
No problem. I had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah, a little bit of hometown history, too, for us Columbus boys. Very awesome. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. We love hearing your thoughts. You can talk to us on Twitter or Instagram at PreDeadBoys. Email us predeadboys@gmail.com, and you can find our Facebook group. Just search PreDeadBoys Podcast. If you want to support the podcast, like all of our incredible friends and fans across the world have, you can still do that. Number one, just tell a friend about the podcast. We don't advertise. Tell people who would be into listening to this, hey, listen to this. Also, you can tip us a few bucks at ko-fi.com/predeadboys. You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and we will read it. For example, here is a 5-star review from friend of the podcast, Alan.
Hey, Alan.
Alan put like those little circle marks, you know, not umlauts or apostrophes, but like the little...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what those are. So it's A-L-A-N, but it's got those little O's over it, so...
Lowellin.
Yeah, I don't know. If one of our Scandinavian country listeners wants to tell us what that pronunciation
is. School our dumb asses.
Yeah, this guy is not Scandinavian. He's very American, so let us know if he's being culturally insensitive. He did leave a nice review. The title is "Here to Jump on the Bandwagon of an Award-Winning Podcast." Here's what Alan says. Apparently, Columbus Podcast Awards and PodFest Midwest awarded this podcast the Best Entertainment Podcast. Apparently, these guys are of international fame. Apparently, you should start listening to these guys before they go out and win even more awards. And so, I'm very buttered up. I'm very flattered.
Gassed up. You're gassed up now.
I'm gassed up. I'm feeling top of the world. Thank you so much, Alan. That was very kind of you.
Yeah, it's very sweet. I like all sweet words.
Yeah, sweet words, sweet gifts from people across the world. This podcast has been so much fun to put on. It was already fun when it was just me and Max stuffed in the basement talking about death. And the fact that it means anything to anybody enough that they would say and do such nice things for us, it's mind-blowing. You guys are awesome.
Wow, yeah. Love every single one of you.
Mm-hmm. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out along with their brand spanking new album at bratcurse.bandcamp.com, or you can stream their self-titled new album on Spotify or wherever you listen to music. And I think that's going to do it for us. Max, I don't know what you're in for tonight, but we do have a pile of Polish candy to put down.
We do. We can go check out those bones by North Market, too.
We're just chewing on like Polish Kit Kats like, hey... Mind if I dig around here?
Just taking a shovel down there.
Yeah, actually on the other side of North Market is a bunch of douchey bro bars that are going to be really crazy on a Friday night. So we got to fight through the crowds. And
all the more reason to have a shovel. Jesus, that was dark.
We better cut it off before you say something incriminating.
Yeah, can you delete that so the cops can't hear?
Please? Nope, leaving it in. Max and Dorian reminding you, you're going to rot. Especially if you party at Park Street Cantina. Poland. Isn't that sweet?
That's so sweet.
I am...
I'm going to send a photo to Katrina really quick.
Yeah, man. I can't stand any more crying fits today, but I about lost it when that came in the mail. That was so cool. Oh, by the way, I do want to split that candy.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, cool. You can't have all of it.
Good. Chomp on all of it.
We got a candy draft. 3 huge candy bars, too, so it's like, if we draft them, it's going to be uneven. I got dibs on first pick.
Sorry.
You're good, man.
Okay, ready to rock. Back in the game.
Cool.
God damn, that's just so cool.
Isn't it?
Okay.
Early on a Sunday, April morning. First sentence, huh? Just beefed it.
First clause. That's not even a complete sentence.
Fuck, dude.